A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been deep in the Amazon listings again. He's asking for a rundown of the 10 most captivating solar-powered garden accessories. But the real project here's something bigger. He wants to know how to combine these things for maximum what is that thing effect. Specifically, why solar-powered gadgets are the ultimate gimmicks, how a glowing frog plus a rotating beacon can delight a baby, and how to arrange the whole spectacle so the in-laws pull into the driveway and just stare. Tasteful or ridiculous, he's open to both, but I think we all know which direction he's leaning.
The ridiculous direction is the only one that makes sense here. If you're going to put a solar-powered flamingo in your yard, committing halfway is worse than not committing at all.
That's the thesis, really. So let's get into it. The nirvana of gimmicks, and what happens when garden gnomes meet industrial safety.
We should define what makes something a gimmick in the first place, because solar-powered garden accessories are almost a pure case. A gimmick is a feature that exists primarily to attract attention rather than to serve a practical function. And with these devices, the solar panel is the feature. It promises free, effortless, magical illumination. The sun does the work, you just enjoy the glow. The reality is a photovoltaic cell about the size of a postage stamp, charging a tiny nickel metal hydride or lithium ion battery all day, which then powers an LED for maybe 2 or 3 hours after dusk, assuming it was sunny. On a cloudy day, you get a faint, anemic flicker, like the thing is apologizing for existing.
So the gimmick is that it technically works, but barely. The promise is magic. The delivery is a dim green light that dies by 9 p.m.
And that's not a bug. That's part of the charm. These aren't meant to replace your porch light. They're meant to be a little surprise in the flower bed. A tiny, slightly pathetic glow that makes you go, oh, right, I bought that. And then you forget about it until the next evening. The underwhelming performance is what makes them endearing.
It's the physical embodiment of a novelty item. The thing exists not because it solves a problem, but because someone looked at a frog statue and thought, what if it glowed?
And Amazon is the perfect ecosystem for this. The marketplace rewards novelty and volume. The barrier to entry for listing a solar-powered praying mantis with a rotating head is essentially zero. You don't need to prove there's demand. You just put it up and see if the algorithm finds your people. And because the manufacturing cost is negligible, a small solar panel, a cheap LED, a molded plastic shell, you can take wild swings. The result is this incredible long tail of hyper-specific, bizarre products that would never exist in a physical store. No brick-and-mortar garden center is stocking a solar-powered squirrel holding a glowing acorn. But on Amazon, there are probably 17 versions.
I'm almost afraid to ask if you've counted.
I haven't, but I did spend an evening going down this rabbit hole, and I emerged with a taxonomy. 3 broad categories. First, the animal kingdom. Frogs, owls, flamingos, squirrels, turtles, the occasional hedgehog. Second, the light show. String lights, spotlights, lanterns, those little stake lights that line a pathway. Third, and this is where it gets interesting, the industrial crossover. Rotating beacons, hazard lights, security floodlights. Devices originally designed for construction vehicles and warehouse loading docks, now repurposed for the garden. The magic happens when you mix categories.
So, before we get to the combinations, let's lay out the toolkit. Daniel asked for 10. Walk us through the list.
Group 1, the animal kingdom. Number 1, the solar-powered frog. This is the classic. Usually a resin or plastic frog, maybe 6 to 8 inches tall with a solar panel embedded in its back or on a separate stake. The LED is typically in the belly, so the whole abdomen glows a soft green or warm white. Some versions have the eyes light up instead. It's the entry-level gateway into this world. Number 2, the solar-powered owl. Almost always with a rotating head and glowing eyes. The head swivels slowly on a cheap motor, and the eyes emit a red or yellow light. It's marketed as a pest deterrent. The idea is that birds and rodents will think it's a real owl, but the rotating head is so jerky and unnatural that any self-respecting pigeon just ignores it.
It's not fooling anything with a brainstem.
It's fooling the person who bought it, and that's enough. Number 3. The solar-powered flamingo. A plastic flamingo with LEDs inside the body so the whole bird glows pink at night. It's a direct descendant of the classic lawn flamingo, but now it's self-illuminating. Number 4. The solar-powered squirrel. Usually depicted holding an acorn that lights up, sometimes the tail glows. It's less common than the frog or owl, but it's out there, and it's wonderfully unnecessary.
A glowing acorn. The squirrel has gathered a radioactive nut.
It's preparing for a very specific winter. Group 2, the light show. Number 5, the solar-powered rotating beacon. This is the amber-yellow dome light you see on forklifts and tractors. It spins, or more accurately, the reflector inside rotates around a stationary LED, creating that sweeping beam effect. It's slow, it's hypnotic, and it looks deeply out of place in a garden. Number 6. Solar-powered LED string lights. These are the base layer for any spectacle. You can get them in warm white, cool white, multicolor, with different flashing modes. They're the most practical item on this list, which means they're also the least interesting on their own. Number 7. The solar-powered spotlight. A small, adjustable spotlight on a stake designed to illuminate a specific feature, a tree, a statue, a bush. By itself, it's tasteful. Combined with the other items on this list, it becomes a stage light for the absurd.
And group 3, the industrial crossover.
Number 8, the solar-powered hazard warning light. Red flashing, typically with a magnetic base meant for vehicle roofs. It says emergency in a language that predates words. Number 9, the solar-powered security floodlight. Motion-activated, very bright relative to everything else on this list, designed to blast light when something moves. Number 10, the solar-powered garden lantern with a faux flame. A flickering LED that mimics a candle or gas flame, usually in a decorative housing. It's the one item on this list that's actually trying to be tasteful, and that's why it's the perfect counterpoint to everything else.
So, that's the arsenal. 10 items spanning from a gentle glowing frog to a red emergency strobe. Now, before we start combining them, I want to understand the mechanism a little better, because the gimmick nature is rooted in the physics. You mentioned the tiny panel and the small battery. What's actually happening inside these things?
It's beautifully simple, which is part of why they're so cheap. You've got a photovoltaic cell, usually amorphous silicon, printed on a small glass or plastic substrate. During the day, sunlight hits the cell and generates a small current, we're talking milliamps, which trickle charges a rechargeable battery. In the cheaper units, it's a nickel metal hydride cell, maybe 300 to 600 milliamp hours. The slightly nicer ones use a lithium ion cell, but still tiny, maybe 400 to 800 milliamp hours. There's a simple circuit that detects when the voltage from the solar panel drops, meaning it's getting dark, and switches on the LED. The LED draws maybe 20 to 50 milliamps. Do the math, and on a full charge, you're getting a few hours of light at best.
And that's on a full charge. On a cloudy day, the panel generates a fraction of the current. The battery doesn't top up, and you get 45 minutes of a dim, wheezing glow.
Right. The panel size is the fundamental limitation. A solar panel that's 2 inches square just isn't capturing much energy. But making the panel bigger would ruin the aesthetic. You can't have a frog with a dinner plate-sized solar panel on its back. Well, you could, and now I kind of want to see that.
A frog with a solar panel the size of a satellite dish. That's a different product category entirely.
The other thing that fails is the battery. NEMH cells don't love being left fully discharged for long periods, which is exactly what happens in winter or during a stretch of overcast days. After a season or two, the capacity drops off a cliff. The light still comes on, but it's even dimmer and it dies even faster. The device becomes a tiny, sad monument to its own decline.
Which, again, is part of the charm. The gimmick is degrading in real time, and you're watching it happen. It's a slow-motion performance art piece about entropy.
That's a generous reading, but I'll take it. Now, Daniel mentioned that these things can provide delightful experiences for babies. I actually think there's something to that. Think about what a baby responds to visually. High contrast. Slow, predictable movement. Soft, diffuse light sources. A solar-powered frog with a glowing belly is basically a low-tech outdoor baby mobile. The light is gentle. It's not a harsh LED blasting lumens. It's a muted glow filtered through colored plastic. Add a rotating beacon into the mix, and you've got a multi-sensory experience. The beacon sweeps a warm amber beam across the garden in a slow, rhythmic pattern. The frog glows steadily. The combination of static and moving light is genuinely stimulating for an infant's developing visual system.
And the slowness is key. A baby can track it. The beacon isn't spinning at 60 RPM. It's more like 10 or 15 revolutions per minute. It's almost meditative.
There's also an element of surprise and predictability at the same time, which is exactly what babies find engaging. The light sweeps past, disappears, and then comes back, always from the same direction, always at the same interval. It's a pattern they can learn, and because the whole thing is solar-powered, it just happens automatically at dusk. You don't have to switch it on. You're sitting on the porch with the baby, the sun goes down, and suddenly the garden comes alive with this gentle, weird little light show.
The baby doesn't know it's weird. The baby just sees glowing frog, moving light, and thinks this is what gardens do.
The baby has no frame of reference. To the baby, a garden is supposed to have a pulsating red hazard light and a squirrel holding a radioactive acorn. The in-laws, on the other hand, have a very established frame of reference, which is what makes them the ideal audience for the more advanced configurations.
Let's get into that. The art of the combination. You've got 10 items. How do you deploy them for maximum watt? Is that thing effect?
The effect is rooted in cognitive dissonance. The brain encounters a scene, a garden, and tries to categorize it. Garden means flowers, shrubs, maybe a tasteful birdbath. But then, it registers an amber rotating beacon, the kind you'd see on a utility truck, and a frog with a glowing abdomen, and a pink flamingo that's lit from within like a lantern. The brain can't reconcile the categories. Garden and industrial safety don't belong together. Garden and emergency vehicle don't belong together. The dissonance is what generates the "what is that thing" response. It's not just surprise, it's confusion at the categorical level.
So, the more incongruous the elements, the stronger the effect. You're not just mixing styles, you're mixing worlds.
Right, and there's a spectrum. On one end, tasteful. A single solar lantern with a faux flame placed on a patio table. That's not what we're here for. On the other end, the full spectacle. I've got three combinations I want to propose, each with a different theme.
I'm ready.
Combination 1. I'm calling it the construction site oasis. Take a solar-powered frog. Place it on a small pedestal. A flower pot turned upside down works. Surround the pedestal with a ring of 4 rotating beacons. Behind the frog, place 2 red hazard warning lights flashing. The visual message is, this frog is extremely important and possibly in danger. The beacons sweep their amber beams in slow circles. The red lights pulse, and at the center of it all is a serene, unmoving frog with a gentle green glow emanating from its belly. The frog is under emergency surveillance, and nobody knows why.
The frog doesn't know why either. The frog is just sitting there.
The frog is the calm center of a security incident. Combination 2, the alien landing pad. Take a solar-powered spotlight and aim it at a solar-powered owl with a rotating head and glowing red eyes. Position the owl high, on a fence post or in a tree branch. Behind the owl, place a red flashing hazard light so it pulses through the leaves. The spotlight makes the owl's eyes blaze, the head swivels, the red light strobes in the background. From the street, it looks like something has landed in your garden and is scanning for threats.
The owl is the scout. It's doing reconnaissance on the neighborhood.
And the slow head rotation makes it feel calculating. It's not just looking around, it's assessing. Combination 3, the disco inferno. This one is more joyful. String solar-powered LED lights through a large bush or small tree. Use the multicolor ones with a slow fade or chase mode. Place a solar-powered flamingo in the center of the bush so it's peeking out. Mount a rotating beacon above the flamingo so the amber beam sweeps across the whole scene. The effect is a low-energy disco. The LEDs shift colors, the flamingo glows pink, the beacon rotates, and the whole thing moves at the pace of a tired party guest who refuses to leave the dance floor.
A disco running on approximately 2 watts of power. It's the saddest, most wonderful nightclub in the world.
And that's the point. None of this is impressive in a technical sense. A professional light show this is not. The beacon rotates at the speed of a lazy ceiling fan. The LEDs are dim. The whole thing is running on batteries that are already depleting as you watch. But that's what makes it charming. It's not trying to be a Vegas spectacle. It's a personal statement that says, I have a sense of humor about my garden, and also I spent $47 on Amazon at 2 in the morning.
The commitment is what sells it. If you half do this, if you put out one frog and call it a day, it's just a weird lawn ornament. But if you build an entire scene with multiple light sources and a clear theme, it becomes something else. It becomes a story.
And for the in-laws, the key is placement. You want the spectacle visible from a specific vantage point. The dinner table if you're eating outside, the driveway when they first arrive, the guest bedroom window. You want it to be the first thing they notice, and you want to be there to see their face when they process it. The goal is to make them question your sanity, but in a way that's so committed, so fully realized, that they can't just dismiss it as a random purchase. They have to engage with it as a creative work.
They have to ask the question, "What is that thing?"
And you get to explain, with a straight face, that it's a construction site oasis, and the frog is under surveillance, and yes, those are industrial hazard lights, and no, there's no particular reason, it's just what the garden wanted.
The garden wanted. That's a beautiful deflection.
There's one more dimension to this that I think is worth exploring. The motion-activated floodlight. It's item 9 on the list, and it's the most viscerally effective tool in the arsenal. You position it to illuminate a statue, say the owl, but it's off most of the time. When someone walks past, it triggers. Suddenly, the owl is blasted with bright white light, the red eyes are blazing, the head is rotating. It's a jump scare. A garden jump scare.
You're weaponizing the in-laws' own movement against them. They walk to the car, and the garden accuses them.
The garden is reactive. That's what makes it unsettling. It's not just a static display, it responds. And because the floodlight is solar-powered, the whole thing is self-contained. No wiring, no timer, no effort. You stake it in the ground, angle it at the owl, and forget about it. The garden does the rest.
The garden becomes an autonomous zone of mild psychological warfare.
And that's the knock-on effect I find interesting. The gimmick nature of these devices, the dim lights, the slow rotation, the limited runtime, it's not a flaw you tolerate. It's part of the appeal. A perfectly reliable, blindingly bright version of this would be obnoxious. It'd feel aggressive. The low power, slightly pathetic quality makes it endearing. It's not a security installation. It's a whimsical, quirky, personal expression. The fact that the batteries are dying and the lights are fading as the evening goes on. That's the show. The spectacle has a natural arc. It peaks at dusk and then slowly, gently declines into darkness.
It's a metaphor for something. I'm not sure what, but it's definitely a metaphor.
Everything is a metaphor if you squint hard enough.
Speaking of squinting at unreliable light sources, I think our producer Hilbert has some first-hand experience with this kind of thing.
1997. I worked a summer at a place called the World's Largest Teapot out in Chester, West Virginia. It's a roadside attraction. 12-foot teapot painted red and white. Tourist stop, take pictures, buy a postcard. The owner had this idea to line the driveway with solar-powered rotating beacons so people could find it from the highway at night.
Did it work?
The beacons were the most unreliable things ever built. We had 12 of them. On any given night, maybe 4 would turn on. 2 would spin. 1 would just flicker. The rest did nothing. I spent most of that summer replacing AA nickel-cadmium batteries that had cooked themselves in the sun.
That sounds miserable.
It was the best thing that happened to that teapot. People started showing up specifically to see which lights were working. Families would make a game of it. They'd pull into the lot and count the functioning beacons. We had a chalkboard inside the gift shop where we'd write the number. 4 out of 12, August 14th. 2 out of 12, August 15th. The owner stopped me from fixing them. He said the randomness was better advertising than a steady light.
The unreliability became the attraction.
The lights would go on and off in no particular pattern. Clouds, shadows, a bird sitting on the panel, anything could trigger it. One beacon would spin for 10 seconds, stop, then start again. It looked like Morse code. I had a guy tell me he drove 40 miles because his neighbor said the teapot was sending signals.
The teapot was sending signals.
The teapot wasn't sending signals. It was a teapot with dying batteries. But I've thought about it ever since. The randomness is what made it work. A steady light is a sign. An unreliable light is a mystery.
So you're saying the failure mode of these solar gadgets is actually a feature?
I'm saying if you want to confuse your in-laws, don't make it predictable. Put a solar-powered frog on something that moves. A lazy Susan hooked up to one of those little solar fountain pumps. The pump pushes water, the lazy Susan turns, the frog rotates at a speed nobody can anticipate because it depends on how much sun the pump panel got that day.
A slow, unpredictable carousel of confusion.
Some nights it'll spin, some nights it won't. Some nights it'll do a quarter turn and stop. Nobody will know why, least of all the frog.
I love this. It's like you're introducing an element of chance into the garden. The spectacle is different every night.
That was the teapot lesson. People came back because they didn't know what they were going to see. Your in-laws will do the same thing. They'll check the garden every time they visit. Is the frog spinning tonight? Is the owl doing its thing? They'll have opinions. They'll develop theories.
Hilbert, I have to ask. The teapot, is it still there?
Still there. Still has the beacons. They've replaced the chalkboard with a whiteboard. Last I heard, they were up to 18 lights, and the success rate was still about 30%. The gift shop sells a t-shirt that says, I saw the teapot signal.
I'd buy that shirt.
They're $12. The beacons are $22.99 on Amazon. I checked.
Of course you did.
The teapot signal. That's going to stick with me.
It stuck with the guy who drove 40 miles.
So, where does all this leave us? The solar-powered garden gimmick is a gateway. It gets people engaging with solar technology, even if the application is absurd. A glowing frog isn't going to save the planet, but it might make someone think, huh, the sun charged this thing all day, and now it's glowing. That's a small, silly, tangible demonstration of a much bigger idea.
The absurdity is the most honest form of engagement, honestly. Nobody's pretending these things are serious infrastructure. They're toys. But they're toys that run on sunlight. And the fact that people are out there combining them into elaborate, ridiculous installations, that's a kind of folk art. It's creative, it's personal, and it's powered by a renewable resource. Even if the resource is being captured by a 2-inch panel on a squirrel's head.
The goal isn't a beautiful garden. It's a garden that tells a story. And if the story is, I bought a bunch of weird stuff on Amazon and arranged it into a low-budget alien encounter, that's a story worth telling.
What happens when the batteries finally die for good? These things have a lifespan. 2, 3 years, and then the NEMH cell won't hold a charge anymore. The lights stop coming on, the beacon stops spinning, the frog goes dark.
Then they become permanent, silent statues. The spectacle ends, but the objects remain. A frozen owl with empty eyes, a flamingo that no longer glows, a ring of dead beacons around a frog on a pedestal. It becomes a different kind of art. A memorial to the gimmick.
A garden of forgotten promises.
Which is also a story. Maybe a sadder one, but still a story.
Well, now I'm curious what the next generation of these things looks like. Are we going to see solar-powered drones that hover over gardens? Tiny quadcopters with LEDs, programmed to orbit a birdbath at dusk?
The battery math on that's brutal, but someone will try. Someone is definitely going to try.
I hope they do. I want to see a garden defended by a swarm of dimly lit, slowly failing autonomous drones. That's the logical endpoint of this whole category.
And when it happens, Daniel will send us another prompt, and we'll do this all over again.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running and for the teapot story, which I didn't see coming.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own questions about garden spectacles or anything else, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon. Until then, may your frogs glow and your beacons spin unpredictably.
Preferably in front of your in-laws.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.